Listen to the Carl Nelson Show now on our free mobile app.
Thanks for staying with us, folks. I guess it's Neely Fuller Jr. having a class on racism and white supremacy, or I should say 800-450-7876. And Neely Fuller Jr. is doing this next. Mr. Fuller, how are you feeling, sir?
I'm still learning.
Good to hear that. We'll try to learn it right along with you. You know, one of the things I wanted to ask you about today is that, you know, we talk about the system of racism, white supremacy, and we still got some folks who refuse to, I wouldn't say refuse, but still not understanding what the term means, racism, white supremacy. But before I let you break it down, though, we see all these things happening. We're talking about the slaps and the fights. There was one last night at the Hollywood Bowl with a couple of comedians. But the question is, all these, you know, these distractions, some people say them as distractions, some people say them as they're diversions. But are they part of the system of racism and white supremacy? Are they there to take our mind off the oppressor? Can you explain that for us, Mr. Neely Fuller Jr.?
I don't know. It depends on whether or not that's what it does. But if you're talking about the system of white supremacy and people want to know what logic says that it is, it's the strongest government in recorded history up to this point here in the year 2022. Recorded. I don't know of the record, but any record of any government being worldwide 24/7 that's stronger than the system of white supremacy. Now you have a government right there, you know, in an individual hut. You might just have two people. And they sit there and they go fishing, and because that's the way they sustain themselves. And they're in a small log cabin, two married people, and people who consider themselves married. And they're sitting at the table in the evening, and they're talking about their problems, and they're trying to solve their problems. Or it might be just one person, a person what you might call a hermit, just alone in a cabin, way up in the mountains somewhere on the planet. That is a government. What is a government? A government is just what rules over people as far as their affairs are concerned, what motivates them to do whatever they do. In this case, I'm just giving an illustration of a person who, in order to eat, goes fishing, and who resides in a log cabin alone or with a partner of some type. And that's a government. Now, if you're talking about the strongest, most powerful government that motivates people more than any government that exists in recorded history, and I'm asking the entire radio audience not to take my word for it, just examine all of history that's recorded and bring it right up to date and see if any government before now has ever been worldwide governing everybody and their thoughts and their motivations more than any other type of philosophy other than the system of white supremacy. And that's if someone asks, what do I mean by that? Or people do argue back and forth. What do you mean by white supremacy and whatnot? It means there's a government based on mistreating people based on color. And according to what I'm seeing, unless I'm not seeing it correctly, that's the strongest and most powerful government in recorded history. Because all over the world, the first consideration among the people of the planet, either directly or indirectly, and that includes people who have never seen people who are of any color other than just the people who are around them, it still dominates all of their thinking, directly or indirectly, on what they do and what they say, directly or indirectly, in all areas of activity, economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. In fact, the government of the system of white supremacy is the strongest religion that has ever presented itself or been manufactured by the people of the planet called the planet Earth. People bow down and cater more to the system of white supremacy, and I'm talking about people all over the planet, more than they do any other government ever conceived in the minds of people. And it is the strongest political system ever produced, and the most efficient.
Let me jump in and ask you this question, though. So did they actually sit down and decide that they were going to come up with this system of racism, white supremacy, and they figured out the nine eras? Or was it sort of organic? It was just sort of spontaneous.
Well, whoever thought it up, and I don't know who that was, thought up the most powerful idea for motivating people that ever presented itself in recorded history according to the evidence. I'm just going by the evidence. I'm not going by how I think it ought to be or what somebody told me that it might be and all like that. I'm going by what everybody jumps to at the beginning of every day, particularly if you're a person of color, and most of the people on the planet have color in their skin. When the white supremacists speak, they jump. When the white supremacists say, I will dominate you and your religion, they make that stick. I haven't seen any instance where they don't make a stick. If they say, I'm going to dominate you and your politics because I'm white and you are not, so whatever your political persuasion is, I will dominate it directly or indirectly. If we're talking about education, you get in your little rickety boats and whatnot and bring your dark-skinned people, I mean, with the babies in their arms, I mean, you gather up everybody in your family, and you're trying to find out what? Which way did the white people go? See, you can talk all that stuff if you're black to other black people, but you don't get in a white person's face if you're a person of color and say anything and make it stick, and they can't overrule you. That's what white supremacy means. Because who is there to overrule it? I haven't seen any evidence of it and haven't heard of anybody who has seen it.
All right. Hold that thought right there. We're going to take a short break. I'll let you finish your thought on the other side. Folks, you want to join us and speak to Neely Fuller Jr., reach out to us at 800-450-7876. Your call's next on FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
Listen to the Carl Nelson Show now on our free mobile app.
Thanks for staying with us, folks. I guess it's Neely Fuller Jr. having a class on racism, white supremacy, or I should say the system of racism, white supremacy. Those of you who say you don't understand it, please listen very cleanly, very clearly, because Neely uses logic, cause and effect, to prove his points. So it's one of these shows you got to stick your ear right into that speaker. You can't be doing something else, as you're going to miss what he's trying to say. And from talking to a lot of people, they still haven't caught on to what Neely Fuller and Dr. Wilson have been trying to teach us about the system of racism, white supremacy. And I got to tell you this, I didn't get it the first time either. You know, I had to call Dr. Wilson up and say, hey, break it down for me. But so if you don't understand it, just raise your hand. Don't be ashamed. You can use a different name, a different city, and just dial us up at 800-450-7876. I know Neely Fuller will break it down for you. He'll explain what the system of racism and white supremacy is all about. So Neely Fuller, I'm going to let you finish with your thought you was telling us about how it came to be and how this structure of racism and white supremacy came to be.
Well, I don't really know how it came to be because I wasn't here when it started. But I know when I got here, it was already in place and has never been not in place since I've been here. And I haven't talked to anybody who remembers when it was not in place. They weren't here. And people have told me, and I listened to all of them, that, well, the system of white supremacy is really kind of a sloppy system that improved itself over a period of roughly 400 to 600 years. And then other people have chimed in and said, oh, no, That's real conservative. The system of white supremacy is at least 2,000 years old, going back to at least the time of Jesus, all right, and the Roman emperors and all that. Certainly, I mean, it was active. People believed in and followed white supremacy back during the time of the Roman emperors. The Roman emperors were white supremacists, a lot of people have said. And so other people have said, oh, no, that's conservative. It goes back 6,000 years. So I just simply tell the people the truth about what I say, and that is, I don't know. But I know it's the most powerful thing since I've been here. I haven't seen anything more powerful. And I've asked people who have traveled just about everywhere, have you seen any place or know of any place where that's not the most powerful force in every area of activity among people of color? People of color jump to the tune of the system of white supremacy more than they jump to any other tune. If they have color in their skin, and I've asked that question, and people have said, well, now that I think about it, I can say sort of, I mean, people start giving vague answers. And I say, either it's true or it's not. Now, which is it? Because I don't want to believe anything that's not true. And I certainly don't want to be participating on worldwide radio and putting out anything that's not true. And I'm saying, from everybody I've ever talked to, including people who have spent a lot of time studying and gone all over the world, and some of them, I mean, have been on boats where people were examining the bottom of the ocean, and they say when it comes to people, somebody white is always ruling over anybody who's non-white, any time of day or night. And as far back as they can remember, that's always been true. Except on a one-on-one basis where a black person disagrees with a white person, but that black person has always had to have a white person back them up in that disagreement. Because there were no black people strong enough to back them up in a disagreement with somebody white.
So let me jump in here again and ask you this. And so it is global then. It's not just confined to the borders of the United States.
It ain't no such thing as the United States in the system of white supremacy except the United States of white supremacy. Now, let's show the logic of that. What is united? Start with the word united. It means two or more things together. And what is a state? Well, if you're talking about the United States, you're talking about two or more people. If a state is a person, because a state is a state of being, a person is a state of being, rather. And so, if you have two white supremacists, two people who agree in the system of white supremacy, that white people, just by being white, should dominate and mistreat people who have color in their skin, because that's what white supremacy means, in all areas of activity, 24/7, all over the planet. That's the basic white supremacist belief. And they are the only people who have that belief, or any belief of any kind, including all the religions combined, who practice that belief all the way. And the evidence shows that. A lot of people cut corners on what they consider to be their religion. And they usually cut all the corners off any religion that they have. When the white supremacists come around and said, I don't care what you believed in before I got here, but you're going to believe in me before I leave this evening. And if you're a person of color, they have always proven that they mean what they say. There's no backing down. That's what proves, like I said, the power of it. I've searched and racked my brains and tried to find people, I mean, who said, please tell me. You know, I've said it for years. I mean, it hurts please tell me that there's some place, there's some people somewhere, there's some magic people somewhere that have color in their skin who don't put up with this at all. The white supremacists can't tell them nothing to do, and they do it. And I've never heard anybody, after we talked about it for a great length of time, walk off and say, well, it won't always be that way. It wasn't always that way. I'm talking about now, sir, ma'am. You know, and that's every year I've been on the planet, every day, every minute. No one has ever told me anything different after we went round and 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 round. And there's all kind of talk about what book has been written and what a certain person said or found in some desert somewhere 50 million years ago or something like that. But I say since the beginning of the system of white supremacy, has anybody come up with a formula of any kind where that wasn't true, that the white supremacist's influence wasn't dominant over a non-white person, wherever that non-white person may be, or how much they know, or who they thought they knew before the white supremacists got on their case? And I hope I answered the question.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I possibly can. Because, like I said, I tried to run away from it. And the system of white supremacy is like a person in the desert. This is one picture that I give. At high noon, and you're trying to outrun your shadow. I don't care where you twist and turn. If you've got color in your skin, when you look down, you see it. I mean, your shadow's there. And the white supremacists are just like the shadow, only it's a white shadow for every black person on this planet. I don't care what a black person does or where they go or where they try to hide or what empire they try to build or anything like that. The white supremacist just walks in and picks it over in about 2 minutes if they want to. And the only reason it stands is because the white supremacist says, hey, let it stand. I mean, it's not hurting my business. But if it hurts my business, I'm going to hurt them. And they know what a hurting is when I put it on them. I've never seen it fail.
All right. Hold that thought right there, Neely Fuller Jr. 800-450-7876. Call up a couple of your friends and tell them Brother Neely Fuller Jr. is on the radio discussing racism, white supremacy. I should say, I always lose that a couple of or the first words of the system of racism, white supremacy. Fixico is joining us online too, calling from L.A. Fixico, you have a question for Neely Fuller Jr.?
Yes, Hotel Brother Carl and Dr. Fuller, it's an honor, sir. I have a question. I believe that the Will Smith slap heard around the world at the Oscar ceremony was an example of, and I've certainly been guilty of it myself, the overwhelming urge for us to self-sabotage our greatest accomplishments. Is this true? And how does the system of white supremacy create these overpowering self-destructive urges, if true? And I'll take my answer off there. Thank you.
Well, apparently, they just decided to make a religion out of something that gelled into something that we kind of loosely call white supremacy. I call it the system of white supremacy in capital letters because I say it covers all areas of activity. It's not a sometime thing. And I'm saying that it works. And that's why it's lasted so long. I mean, people usually abandon something that's not working well. I mean, they modify it and whatnot until they find it just kind of withers away. All down through history, this has been true, among tribes and everything. But the system of white supremacy has proven to have staying power. It has staying power. And like I said, whoever thought it up, they might not have known it at the time, but it was a stroke of genius. Somebody, you know, I don't know if it started with one person or two or a committee, But somebody said, why not do all of the world's business on the basis of what color somebody is?
Right. Somebody, hold on right there, Neely Fuller Jr. Yeah. We got to take a short break, and I'll let you pick it up on the other side and responding to Fixico's question. Folks, you want to join the class, reach out to us, 800-450-7876, and speak to Neely Fuller Jr. We'll take your calls after this quick break on FM 95.9 and AM 1450, WOL, where information is power.
Is reality radio.
The definition of distraction is something that prevents a person from giving their full attention to something else. Distractions have been used since the beginning of time to dilute the power of the masses in order to maintain control over their lives. Contrary to the continuing gossip and reactions, the most important couple to the lives of all Americans, but particularly to the lives of black folks in this country, is not actors Will and Jada, but in reality is Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and his treasonous wife, Virginia. Clarence was the only justice. Let me say that again. Clarence was the only one on the Supreme Court to vote against releasing the Trump White House records to the Congressional Committee investigating the January 6th failed coup d'etat. Once those records were opened, it became evident that Clarence Thomas had cast his vote to protect his wife and ignored his responsibility to the voting populace of the USA. So why aren't Clarence and Virginia getting the same level of scrutiny and public discussion that Will and Jada seem to have a never-ending abundance of? Why is there not an outcry from every walk of American life for the mandatory retirement or removal of a man whose tainted opinions can directly impact every one of our lives? The reality is we have been dangerously distracted because a personal slap only affects the parties involved, while a wrong Supreme Court decision can slap millions of us in the face all at the same time.
This is Reality Radio with Kathy Hughes. What's your reality?
What's your reality? What's your reality?
The Carl Nelson Show, now available on iTunes.
And thanks for rolling with us, folks. Our guest is Neely Fuller Jr. And so, Dr. Fuller, I'll let you finish responding to Fixico's question about that slap.
About the slap?
Yeah.
Well, what I have to say about it, I do it according to what I've written in the book. I mean, always saying that in order, rather than just keep talking about there's a problem, I wrote a book. I call it The Code, or The Counter-Racist Code, giving some ideas about what to do about it. So what you say, do and say, people do and say something every day. You know, either doing or saying something, or a combination of both. And so about the slap, if we're talking about
Will Smith.
The movie actor.
Will Smith, and, yeah.
Yes, at the award ceremony. This is to be expected. That's what the code says you say about it. Because and we shouldn't be alarmed or even think harshly about all of the people involved. It's just that goes with the territory of having a system of white supremacy. See, it's deep. It cuts deep. I mean, it's there. We are all flawed by it. There isn't a black person that's breathing now who isn't deeply affected. I mean, completely drowning in the system of white supremacy. We've never known any other system. So we react and act and react to every situation according to what the white supremacists have groomed us for. We shouldn't be surprised at anything that non-white people do that shouldn't be done. That should never surprise us. In the system of white supremacy, we have been highly trained not to do anything else other than that, harm to each other. I mean, deep down, we look forward to doing harm to each other. It's ingrained in us. In everything that we have ever seen around us, right out of the womb. Racism is just that prevalent. So we should never be surprised at anything a black person does that shouldn't be done in the system of white supremacy. Never be surprised. We surprise ourselves at some of the things we do. I know I have. And then I sit down afterwards and think, now where did that come from? The influence. You can't be in a prison, be born in a prison, and the system of white supremacy is a world prison system for everybody with color in his or her skin. A prison system. We're prisoners of war. We are born prisoners of war. You can't be a prisoner of war all of your existence and not be affected by the prison rules. What do prisoners do? Prisoners do? They turn on each other when they get angry or upset. Don't like the food, or they don't like the way they're being treated by the guards, or they don't like this and don't like that, and definitely don't like being a prisoner. So they have prison riots. So we expect that. And the people who run the prison, they always prepare for the riot. They'll let it go for a little while, and then they'll put it down until the next one comes up. And that's what black people do. Our killing each other nonstop. That's all a part of the prison mentality. That's what prisoners do. They turn on each other. So that can be expected. There's just so many facets, hundreds of them, of the ill effects of the system of white supremacy. I mean, even when we argue about it, most of all with whom? Ourselves. And we all get quiet when the white supremacists come around, and we get more polite than we have ever been. But as soon as the white supremacists disappear, we really go at each other. I mean, we let all that pent-up energy and whatnot that we've been holding back while the white people were there, it burst out. Soon as they disappear over the hill, then we go at each other like you wouldn't believe. And each one of us accusing the other of being a sellout or something like that. The white supremacists know that. They're over on the other side here, just laughing like they always do. And saying, Negroes forever. We got them. We got them. They're so dumb. They're so out of it. They don't even know the effect that we have on them. And now they're hitting each other over the head. They can't even walk the streets wherever you have a bunch of them together. They can't have a party without us having to come in, put up a lot of yellow tape and clean up the mess, and yawn, and go back to the other side of town where civilization is, because we know what to expect of them. Well, we are not around. If we are not there to bump their heads together, and they get mad about that, but we know there ain't nothing they can do about it because they ain't got that much sense. That's the white supremacist mentality. And they are not making it up. They're telling the truth when they do that. But a lot of them won't tell the truth. They'll say that, oh, everything is just fine. You people have, you know, you've come a long ways. You've made what we call progress by our standards for a black person. We're thinking about giving you another Wall Street maybe in about 10 years. Ain't that nice? And so we think about that for a while and say, yeah, that's what we need. When what we need, according to what I've written, is to get rid of the entire system of white supremacy and replace it with justice, because that's the only thing that makes sense. And that's worldwide. It won't work unless it's worldwide. And we ought to have learned that by now.
Let me jump in here for a second. And folks, I hope you're listening to this. And if you ever try to figure out why we keep attacking each other, whether it be in the pulpit, whether it be on the Internet, whether it be in the streets, or fighting each other or your family, he just laid it out for you. So we're in this the proverbial prison, Mr. Fuller. Why don't we attack the guards? Why are we attacking each other?
Well, prisoners sometimes do that, but they know they're going to lose. Like Attica, that proved that. I mean, see, once the white supremacists build a prison, it's a prison. Okay, it's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. I often think about the movie Shawshank Redemption. It's one of my favorite movies, where, you know, people did their little things and had got their little gangs going and all this kind of stuff. But finally, the star of the movie, a person called Andy Dufresne, he said, I got to figure out how the warden operates. And the way to do that, like in the movie Godfather, what did Michael Corleone say? His father taught him, keep your friends close and your enemies even closer. Why? Where did that kind of logic come from? Because you should know more about your enemy than you know about what you call your friends, particularly when your friends are in the same terrible shape that you're in. Every general in every army understands that. That's why they send out what they call reconnaissance. I know I've been on those reconnaissance patrols in Korea long time ago. You got to know what's going on. You got to know what's going on the other side of the hill. You got to know what's going on with the people who can do the most harm to you. The people who are controlling everything, the people who run the prison. But the ignorant prisoner, always scheming, burning midnight oil, trying to figure out how to outsmart the other prisoner. That's not the way to get out of prison. You study how the prison is put together, who's putting it together, all the people that run the prison, how they come and go. That's how you have prison breaks. You don't set it other prisoners. You can't get nowhere doing that. But black people do what? We study each other more than we study anything in the universe. And that's how we become dumber and dumber. There's not a whole lot to learn among people who are in captivity, except how to continue to be in captivity. That's the logic. We don't tap into the logic of the universe. And that's what I'm trying to do on this program. That's why I come on these programs. And that's what I discovered. Black people study each other more than they study anything. We pay attention to each other more than we pay attention to anything in the universe, while the white supremacists are studying the entire universe. And anybody who does that will always be ahead. We are ghetto worshipers. We've been in prison so long, if we are outside just a few minutes, I mean, we feel naked. Oh, I mean, I feel like I'm at home in the ghetto. You feel like you're at home? In the worst part of the prison, because they have made the whole world a prison for you, then you're going to get a whole bunch of black people who are flat broke, bunch them all up together
right
in what we call the ghetto.
All right, hold that thought right there, Neely. We got to take a short break. Right. I'll let you finish your thought on the other side. We've got some people that want to talk to you as well. 800-450-7876. Get your in calls next on FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance?
I guess it's nearly full of junior folks. If you ever figured out what racism, white supremacy, how the system works, in a class right now. Call up a couple of your friends and let them know that Needy Fuller Jr. is on the radio. 800-450-7876. Always wondered why we're always attacking each other? He's got the answer. And the answer is a code. I know he's going to talk about that later on. Before we go back to you, though, let me just remind you, tomorrow we're going to speak with chematologist Tony Browder. He'll be in the studio with us. Number to call, again, to check out Tony, 800-450-7876. Be right here on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL. So, Mr. Fuller, I'm going to let you finish, and then Ben in Long Beach has got a question for you.
Well, basically, in a capsule, everything I've been saying this evening is the biggest problem on the planet is the race problem. And the race problem is a thing called the system of white supremacy. And the solution to that problem is you have to replace the entire system in all nine areas of activity of white supremacy, which is racism. It's the only form of racism on this planet, with a better system. And a better system, logically speaking, would be the system of justice. So I made up a definition, a compensatory codified definition for the word justice, because I couldn't find any book with the word justice in it that gave me an explanation of what justice looks like. So I wanted something to be explicit. I was very dissatisfied with what I found in all the dictionaries and whatnot. So I made up one, a compensatory. You have to make up compensatory language in order to defeat the system of white supremacy, I have discovered. So I use the English language, but give it new definitions for some words. And the definition for justice I came up with maybe about 40 years ago. And, it consists of two parts, guaranteeing that no person is mistreated and guaranteeing that the person that needs help the most gets the most constructive help. Now, if you don't have those two elements, you don't have justice. And so I'm saying replace the system of white supremacy with the system of justice. It's just that simple. Then you can go on to do greater things, because we should be trying to be universal man and universal woman in tune with everything that's constructive in the universe. Why? Because we are born into the universe. So we shouldn't be restricted based on color or anything else from doing the most constructive things 24/7 each and every day all over the planet. The theory is it can be done. If people just put their minds to it, all of the people on the planet, or as many who can get on board who will form a majority. And, you know, we have to think long range, not just think in the way that we've been trained to think, and that is just make plans for the weekend and that's about it. If you're black, your plans are never supposed to go beyond that under the system of white supremacy.
All right. 800-450-7876. I mentioned Ben's been waiting for us. He's on line 3, calling from Long Beach out in California. Ben, you're on with Dr. Fuller. You have a question for him?
Yes, well, first of all, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Can you help? Okay, very good. So I have several questions for the doc. Doc, first of all, I hope and pray that when I'm 93 years of age that I'm as sharp as you are. You're still sharp as a tack, and it's just amazing. I don't know how you do it. But my few questions is this. First of all, why has white supremacy lasted so long without being defeated? And how can it be defeated in the short term and long term? And I do have one follow-up question after that,
please. Why don't
please.
You just put all together so he'll respond.
Okay. And the last question is, Can individuals obtain their freedom from white supremacy, but the group as a whole may still be enslaved? Say, like, can a few million of us obtain that freedom, but yet hundreds of millions still remain enslaved to white supremacy? And I'll take those answers off the air. Thank you very much.
You know, if you're a person of color, you're in the system of white supremacy. And there's no exception to that, unless you've been reclassified as white. Now, the white supremacists do that, too. They do all the classifying. See, that's another thing. That goes to show you how powerful they are. You can't classify yourself. You got to be approved of by the white supremacists. The white supremacists can look at a black. Person who is just as black as midnight and say, well, I'm going to make you honorary white. And everybody will respect you and regard you as honorary white because I got the power to make everybody of color do it. And they're not playing when they say that. And they actually do that when they find that it's feasible to do so. That's a rare occasion. But in answer to your question, the white supremacist system has lasted long because a lot of people are in denial that it exists. And the white supremacists did that too. See, we're telling them what to do every day, what to eat, where to sleep, what to beg for, and who to beg, and all like that. And at the same time, telling those black people with their dumb selves that we don't have nothing to do with their lives. I mean, you know, they're free. I mean, they can do what they want to. I mean, we tell them that. And sit right there in their face and wink at each other, and they see us winking at each other. And they don't catch it. Why? Because they're too busy looking at each other. They're not watching us. We're scientific. We're the most scientific people on the planet here in 2022. And they're the dumbest people on the planet. That's why they're subject to us. And they're not trying to improve themselves. They're trying to tear each other down every chance they get. Every black person just wants to be just a little bit better or get a little bit more edge than the black person sitting next to them. And they think they had died and gone to heaven. And that's how the white supremacists have trained us to be. In answer to the question, why is it still like that? Because everything in logic, what's that law of inertia? Something stays in place forever. A rock on the moon will stay there for 1 trillion years until somebody just comes along and moves it. It won't move 1 inch. Black people are the same way. We'll sit right there and won't move not 1 inch. Until when? The white supremacists come along and give us a good kick. Then we'll move. That's a starter. Because we're trained that way. We're trained that way. And the other part of the question was, what can we do about it? Now, that's what my book is about. Each individual black person has to become or aspire to become a universal man or a universal woman. And what does that mean? These are terms that I made up. Universal man, universal woman, ultimate man, ultimate woman, meaning you look at the entire universe, not just one or two things in it, like what's happening Saturday night in the ghetto, like we're trained to do. Look at the entire universe and say, what is the best that I can possibly be as an organism in this entire universe that will be the most constructive person that ever existed as an individual person? And how can I produce that type of individual out of myself, regardless of what everybody's doing around me? Try to, at every morning and every hour of every minute of every day, say, what problem have I solved? See, black people have a long reputation for being problem makers. You look up and see a black person coming and say, here comes a problem maker. Okay? Not a problem solver. Here they come, problem makers. We've been trained to be problem makers. And then dump our problems on whomever, you know, happens to come by that can solve them, because we don't know how to solve no problems, but we do know how to make them. And we brag about making them. That's another thing. We are sick. We're just as sick as we can be and don't recognize the sickness. And a part of the code says, one thing we should stop doing, and that's celebrating anything. It's not a black person on this planet who's qualified to celebrate. Why? Because prisoners of war are not in position to celebrate. They are in position to educate themselves about how not to be prisoners. And that's a different scenario altogether. And so I try to write a book called The Counter-Racist Code. Replace the system of white supremacy with the system of justice and go on from there to become universal man, universal woman. Just don't stop establishing justice, meaning guaranteeing that nobody's mistreated. That within the great scheme of things, that should have been done a long time ago. That's elementary stuff. And see to it that everybody that needs help gets it, constructive help, and then move on. This is a huge universe. We should be at the universal level. But we make 2-3 little baby steps like we are trained to do and then stop everything and want to celebrate. And there's dead bodies all around us, black bodies that we help make. They're talking about celebrating. Oh, we're crazy. We are crazy. We're just as crazy as we can be. Well, if one man is killed in Chicago this month as it was last month. Now, the white supremacists has got us thinking like that. Shouldn't be any killing anywhere on the planet. If one black person dies from another black person's hand on this planet, anywhere today, every black person who is celebrating should stop that celebration right there and say, I just came over. Another black person was killed over in Sumatra somewhere. All right. Mongolia, wherever. No time to celebrate. No time to celebrate. Forget about the barbecue. And let's start becoming universal man and universal woman and taking into account this entire universe that we have been given so politely, so kindly by our Creator, and stop this kindergarten foolishness like we are trapped in, like racism, and bowing down to it and slaughtering each other while we are bowing down to racism. And we're not even making any kind of effort that you can call an effort, because we're not using our time correctly. Now, that's what the code says, an answer to the question. I'm saying that's why it's lasted so long, because we're not really on the case at all. Just wait till there's a George Floyd and then, you know, get another sign or 3 or 4,000 of them and march through the streets and have a few white people, I mean, who are kind of bored and yawning and whatnot. So they come down and join the parade for 5 or 6 days and then back to business as usual.
Yeah, because we got to take another break because we're close to the top of the hour, so some of our stations need to identify themselves per the FCC. Stations like FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
CNews.com. The Carl Nelson Show. On 1450 and 95.9. Worldwide at WOLDCnews.com.
And thank you for staying with us, folks. Our guest is Neil Fuller Jr. discussing racism, white supremacy, and he, later on he's going to tell us about a code that's a short name for his book. It's a workbook, and if you work through this book, you understand what, some of the problems that we're going through. Mr. Fuller, one of the questions that Ben in Long Beach asked was can an individual obtain freedom from racism, white supremacy, but the rest of the group, the rest of us, is still trapped in it?
It has to be each individual with a code, which is something we don't have. This is why the white supremacists is so successful. They don't look around to see how many people are with them. They have a code. One white supremacist can go anywhere on the planet among any dark-skinned people, just one. And he doesn't have any buddies and whatnot. He's not a gang, but he has a code. It's called a white supremacist code. Or it may not be by that name. It can be by any name. But that's what it is. Because a code is something that every time you do it, it works. A plumbing code and an electrical code. Any kind of code. You know, when you say you have a code, it means every time you do it, it works. The white supremacists produce a white supremacist code. So one white supremacist can go on some island somewhere amongst a whole bunch of dark people at 9 o'clock in the morning and hang around there till about 12. And about 12 o'clock, at the stroke of 12, have all those people following him or her, if they are people of color, gathering around. They can do that if they really want to. Why? Because they enact a code. They say, oh, these people, they don't know the white code, but they will know it by noon today. Or they will be aware of it, but they won't know how I did what I am going to do while I am here between 9 o'clock in the morning and between 12 o'clock noon. I'm going to have them eating out of my hand. Why? Because I got a lot of power or a gun and all like that? No, I brought with me one thing, a code of what a white supremacist is supposed to do and say when you get around dark people. And that's what they have. And it's been the most successful code for ruling people ever thought up in the minds of people since people were created. Up to the year 2022, at least. And in answer to the question, we need a code. I'm trying to write one. And I'm saying every black person, I mean, we've written this type, by every type of book you can name, and the books are essential about black history and all like that. But the one thing we haven't been doing is what to do about anything. And just in the last 3 or 4 years, for the first time, there's been a few black people who are attempting, and I'm one of them, to write something or even to say something about what do you do under every circumstance, any circumstance you are presented with. Do you have a code that every time you do it, it works? It works to your interest. In that circumstance, have we ever even attempted to have one? The answer is no. But we will talk about the problem forever and argue with each other in barbershops and everywhere else about what somebody ought to do. And the closest thing we have had to a code is slogans. One of the most popular ones is what? We got to get together. I hope I never hear that again. Now, what we got to do is get together. I want Mr. So-and-so to step forward to the mic here, and I'm going to give him a chance, and then I'm going to have Miss So-and-so, and I'm going to have Dr. So-and-so, and each one of them that comes to the mic, after they talk and talk and talk, they'll say, now, here's the solution. What we need to do is get together. Anybody ever heard that? Well, that's it. That's what I came 2,000 miles forward to tell you today that, I had a eureka moment last night, and I thought about it and thought about it and thought about it, all the black people's problems, and I came up with a solution. We have to get together, people, don't we? And then everybody applauds and stomps and go back to the lemonade table, and then you come back to the next year and do the same thing. That's not a code. A code means when you're talking to a white person and you're negotiating, you don't come out losing, all right? When you're interacting with other black people, something constructive happens every time. It's never anything non-constructive. You need a code to do that. But we haven't even attempted to have one. We just got a bunch of slogans. We get a new slogan about every 15 months. I've timed it. And we think that that's a plan. But, that's a solution to black people's problems. Come up with another slogan. We know what they all are. I'm not knocking slogans, but slogans serve a purpose. Slogans are like titles of books. A book should have a title. But when you turn the pages, there should be something in the book rather than blank pages. Or if there's anything in there, every page says, we got to get together. We got to come together, people. See, we got all kind of fancy ways of saying it. But that's not a code for success. You have to have precision work. And when I say this, they're going to say this. And then when I say this, my opposition is going to say this, 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 and this. It's like playing chess. You always are able to predict. That's what a code is. What your opponent is going to do before they do it. That's a code. And you be ready for it when they make their move. You say, I knew they was going to move there because there was no place else for them to move. And when they do, then I'm going to make my move, my codified move. And their opposition is going to shatter. That's a code, folks. That's what we need. And that's what everybody should be writing. And that's what I've been trying to attempt to do.
All right.
What can we do about it? Code, C-O-D-E. That's what we need.
Right. 800-450-7876. And that's the short title of the book, by the way. And before he leaves, I'm going to let him make sure that he tells you how you can get a copy. Because once you get that workbook, you'll understand how the system of racism and white supremacy works. Line four, I think it's Quaco from Milwaukee. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly. If not, forgive me.
No, Brother Carl, this is Dr. Kwaku with Mel Smith from
Kwaku,
Milwaukee.
I'm
how
sorry.
You doing, good sir? Yes. First of all, it's good to be on your show, Brother Carl, but I want to just make sure I give all respect to the elder, Brother Fuller. When I listen to his words, it's just as powerful to me as when I read The Miseducation of the Negro. And as a person who went through the system of white supremacy and had to try to retrain myself to think in a manner in a code and to be able to be better for myself and for my people, I get a little nervous because I think if we do become this universal man, this universal woman, and we get a collective enough to get together, understanding the height and the negative and the evil of white supremacy, in all other times when there was cultures and those cultures fell down, whether it be the Egyptians, whether it be the Romans, whether it be the Russian czars, things of that nature, they didn't have the power for nuclear capability. If we were to become that universal man and universal woman and then be able to destroy the aspects of white supremacy, would they allow it to happen without there being an Armageddon?
We'll find that out, because we're not going to have the kind of world that we need without getting rid of the system of white supremacy. I didn't say get rid of white people. I'm saying, but they got to get rid of this system that everybody's wedded to. We're all a part of this system. We've never known any other system. Now, the white supremacists are not going to want to turn loose to it because it provides what everybody wants. Everybody wants three things. Every person on this planet, when they get up in the morning, they want three things. They want to have fun, they want glory, and they want material comfort. That's what gets you out of bed. You're looking forward to having fun at some point. Squirrels like to have fun. Ducks like to have fun. You watch ducks and whatnot, they like to have fun. And they like glory. They, you know, they peck in their feathers and whatnot and try to clean them up and whatnot when being well thought of by other ducks, okay? Or by anybody, by people. That way they don't get shot, all right? So even animals, they want fun, they want glory, they want material comfort. Some white person sometime in the past discovered you could get a whole lot of fun, a whole lot of glory, being well thought of, being looked up to, being highly regarded, that's what glory is, and a whole lot of material comfort out of building something called the system of white supremacy, which means dominating and mistreating people based on the color of their skin. It's the most powerful political and religious idea ever thought up in recorded history that's been successful. The most powerful. Other systems have been powerful, but no system has been more powerful and more long-running as success with not a whole lot of glitches. They've had some glitches, but not very many because they are very scientific. The system of white supremacy is put together scientifically, not emotionally. And the victims of white supremacy depend on emotions, particularly the darkest of the people of the planet. Everything that we do is based on emotion.
Right there. Yeah, because we're going to take another short break. 800-450-7876. You want to speak to Neely Fuller Jr. about racism and white supremacy? You've reached the right spot. And we'll take your calls after this short break on FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
I'm Kathy Hughes, and I'm very happy to report that our strategy of Buy Black Tuesdays is beginning to work for the black businesses in our radio markets. Thank you to each and every one of you who's already participating and each week making a conscious effort to spend some money with a black-owned business, whether on the local or on the national level. Commitment and conscious awareness of the power of our spending will slowly but surely have an impact on the economic growth in our community. Now that you are doing conscious spending, how about encouraging your family and friends to join us? Because this can really work if we all participate. The recommended businesses for this week are
Anthony Conaway Portrait Design, AnthonyConawayPortraitDesign.com, Blue Iguana Caribbean Cuisine, BlueIguana.com, and Gospel Spreading Bookstore, 202-745-2665.
Thank you.
With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. Even easier than choosing Charles Barkley in a pickup game.
We'll take Barkley.
Ha! First pick! Sorry, kids!
Yep, even easier than that. With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, is it even a decision?
Okay, here's the plan. Pass me the ball every time.
This is banking reimagined. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One N.A. member FDIC.
Do you want to create a legacy for your family and develop generational wealth? Make sure you join Steph Sells the DMV for The Real Estate Report, a weekly show featuring informative segments and conversations with real estate and finance industry leaders and experts. If that sounds appealing, then this show is for you. Tune in every Thursday at 12:30 p.m. for The Real Estate Report. Remember, join Steph Sells the DMV every Thursday at 12:30 p.m. for The Real Estate Report, empowering listeners to create legacy and generational wealth.
Listen to the Carl Nelson Show now on our free mobile app.
Thanks for rolling with us, folks. I guess it's Neely Fuller Jr. Some of you know him as Dr. Francis Quest Wilson's mentor, discussing racism, white supremacy, and how to deal with it, how to handle it. He says, we need a code. As black folks, we need a code. Kwaku in Milwaukee, I thank you for your call. Mr. Fuller, I'm going to let you finish your response to Kwaku's question, because we've got a bunch of other folks. Like, I got questions for you as well.
Yes, people sometimes ask me, or told me, rather, like years ago, someone told me, Fuller, you're talking about this code. I mean, how are you going to keep it from the white supremacists? If you got a code, don't you know that they know it? I said, of course, that's logical. They say, you got a code for breaking out of the white supremacist prison system, or rather eroding it and replacing it with the system of justice, and they don't know about it. I said, I'm not trying to keep them from knowing about it. I want them to know about it, because it's a just code. You don't try to hide your methods of going about producing justice. You don't have to. You don't have to have any secrets. Black people can't keep secrets no way. There's an old saying, if two black people know it, everybody knows it. Of course, one of them going to tell it. Okay? So just forget that. That ain't a part of the code. Anything that you say, be ready to repeat it to the entire world. That's a part of the code. We're talking about getting a code. Another part of the code is... And the most important part, black people have to stop making contact with each other unless we have something constructive to say or do. I mean, that is a real killer. Black people making contact with each other for no constructive reason. We're just making contact. Why? Because whatever reason we give, I mean, we're bored or whatever. No. You don't make kind of, we have all kinds of ways to communicate now. The white supremacists, directly and indirectly, have provided that. So we have ways of just picking up some type of communication device that we have in our pocket and communicate all over the world, like we're communicating now. But if you don't have anything constructive to say to whomever you're going to talk to, particularly when black people talk to each other, you don't make a call of any kind. I don't care if it takes 10 years for you to find something constructive to say. We need to have that as a part of our code. We don't make conversation just to be talking, just because we can't stand silence. I can understand being in prison. I mean, how silence, I mean, is, hey, you got to make some noise. We even have a slang. One of our slangs is what? We got to make some noise. We get put out of apartments on account of the noise we make because we've been suppressed so long. It's understandable. But have something to say that is of constructive value every time you talk to anybody about anything. And if it's not constructive, we got to get in the habit of becoming the most silent people in the world. Go from being the noisiest people in the world to the most silent people in the world. And when you hear a black person say something, you take out your pen and pad, because that black person is fixing to say something that's going to really be of constructive value. Because black people should have the reputation for not talking at all. Here in 2022, not talking at all. Unless, once they start talking, everybody grabs a pen and pad, because you're going to hear something that's really going to help you do something that's going to produce what? Two words. A constructive result. Constructive result. Those are the two words. Constructive result. That should be our reputation by the end of this year, at least. 2022. We can do it. All you got to do is just make up your mind. We need a code to do it. We're going to have to practice doing it. Fixing to make another call, and we say, wait a minute. Am I going to solve a problem for this person or for me or for somebody in the most constructive manner by this call I'm fixing to make? Or am I just calling just to chat? Well, this is okay in a perfect world. But we have all kinds of problems. We should be solving problems. That's why every black person, as part of the code, says, black person, every black person should look upon him or herself as being born for the reason of one reason, problem solving. That's why we were born. So that we have a reputation when somebody sees a black person coming, they say, no, that's not, that used to be a troublemaker coming. But no, that's a problem solver coming. Anytime you see a black person, you're looking at a problem solver. Because that's what they think about doing all the time. They do not have a thought unless it has to do with constructive problem solving and producing a what? Constructive result in any move that they make, anything that they say or do. If they get ready to drink something, it's going to be a problem solver, not a problem maker. Not going to be anything in that drink that's going to make a problem. If that black person, you see that black person getting ready to eat a meal, it's not going to be one ingredient in that meal that's not going to help to solve a problem of the brain and body. You're not going to see them with a plate full of anything that's not going to do that. See, now that's going to be difficult for us to do, but it really isn't. If we codify it and say we're going to do it. I have difficulty doing it. So if you can't use Neely Fuller as an example, in fact, you can't use anybody as an example because there aren't any. So that's the code. We need a code for everything. Every move. You can't have exceptions. Say, well, I'm not going to codify this. I'm going to make an exception in this case. No. No, no. The white supremacists, when they get serious, and they're serious when they act like they're not serious, when they're really serious, they got everything codified, right down to the last nail, hammer, paper clip. Oh, yeah. That's why they are super man and super woman, meaning supreme. Over all of the non-white people of this entire planet, 24/7, because they are serious when they don't, when they act like they're, even when they act like they are not. They are serious about their foolishness and know just how far to go, and they do engage in a whole bunch of foolishness, but they know that they are not in danger when they do. Black people are in danger all the time because we don't have a plan for anything that makes sense collectively or individually.
Because we've got a bunch of folks from all across the country got questions for you. Quaker in Milwaukee, I thank you for your question. 800-450-7876. And Johnny in Long Beach, California, what's your question for Neely Fuller Jr.?
How you doing, Carl? How you doing, Mr. Fuller? Thanks for taking my call. Mr. Fuller, I wanted to ask your opinion about the Supreme Court judge and her being married to a white man and the thing that's going on in Ukraine. And it's like, you know, some people don't feel like we should care about that. What say you?
Well, I'll answer the last question first. We should care about everything going on the planet because it's going to affect you directly, indirectly, one way or another. And everything that's going on every other planet, people find out. Because it's going to affect you one way or another, directly or indirectly. That's what the white supremacists do. The white supremacists, and I have it in my book, they go to the bottom of the ocean and find one grain of sand and study it for 50 years. Just one grain of sand. And I'll walk by and say, hey, Brian, what you doing there? What are you up to now? He said, I'm looking through this microscope. Looking through the microscope for what? Well, I'm looking at this grain of sand. It has a peculiar look. It's not like most sand. I said, what are you studying a grain of sand for? He said, because it's on the planet with me. See, now that's how a white supremacist thinks. That's why they're so powerful. That's why they're just so awful powerful. Study a grain of sand simply because it's on the planet with him. I walk past a whole grain of a whole pile of sand, and I didn't even notice it, except to raise some sand, maybe, before I get to the next corner, particularly if I see another black person. Okay? Now, that first question was what?
The Supreme Court justice being married to a white man.
Oh, the code says, now this is already in the code book, the one that I have, you can get by going to producejustice.com. No such thing as a black person being married to anybody in the system of white supremacy. Prisoners of war, always keep that in mind, are not married. Once you become a prisoner of war, you're not married to nothing. You're powerless to the nth degree. You are zero. You have nothing. Nothing you can call yours. Not a wife, not a husband. So the code doesn't allow me to get personal with people. That's another part of the code. But I'm just saying what the logic says. The logic says you cannot be a prisoner of war and be married. So every black person walking around on this planet who thinks that they are married, they're not married. Because they are prisoners of war. Prisoners of war, what war? The war between the people who believe in and practice white supremacy and the white supremacists who captured the non-white people, and they have never been out of captivity, so they are prisoners of war. That's what. According to Neely Fuller? No, according to the evidence. So prisoners of war are not married. That's number one. And in the system of white supremacy, another part of the code says this, ain't personal, it's business. If you are a person of color and you are so-called married to a white person, in the system of white supremacy, you are as a prisoner of war, not married, you are being further victimized. Why? Where's the logic? Because a white person in the system of white supremacy is the master person. Marriage is between equals. So the white partner in any so-called marital relationship between a black person and a white person, whomever that white person is the most powerful person because they're in the system of white supremacy. And that black person is a prisoner of war. It's like a black school teacher once remarked.
Hold that thought right there, Mr. Fuller. We've got to take a short break. We're here about the black teacher on the other side of this break. Right here, it's the big show. Continues to roll on from Radio 1's flagship station. We're on FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
Nelson Show, now available on iTunes.
And thanks for staying with us. Johnny, thank you for your call out of Long Beach. So, Mr. Fuller, Neely Fuller is our guest. And I guess, tell you, all the time, you've got to listen real keen. We'll let you go, Johnny. We've got a bunch of folks trying to get it. Mr. Fuller, thank you. 800-450-7876. Mr. Fuller, I'm going to let you finish your response to Johnny. He was about to tell us about the teacher.
Yes, the prisoner of war thing again. I mean, either we're prisoners of war or we're not. When I say we, I mean people of color on the planet in 2022. Now, we are either that or not. Either Neely Fuller is saying something that's not true, or he's saying something that is true. It's no in between. So if I'm saying something that's not true, let's put it to a test and find out. That's how I find out. I mean, and I don't put it to a test. The test is put to me. And so, you know, I thought that I was married. And then I begin to look at how everything is run. I'm dependent on a hostile force to feed me, clothe me, and that hostile force of the white supremacists one way or another. I've been in a whole lot of situations where I thought that I could do this and thought that I could do that, and I realized I was a beggar, begging for a job, begging for this, begging for that. Even if I want to get a loan, that's begging. And directly, indirectly, I'm begging who? The white supremacists. That's why they're supreme. There's no money on this planet that's worth anything except the money that they say is worth something. So if I got everything from them, and my so-called spouse gets everything from them, how can I say that I'm a husband? They say it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it takes a system to shelter a married couple. And that system doesn't exist for non-white people. So in answer to that question, a white person married to a black person, or any black person married to anybody in the system of white supremacy, that's impossible. Why? Because the system of white supremacy is hostile to the non-white person. And so the non-white person who considers, the white person who considers him or herself married to a black person is the most powerful person. They're not equal because that white person is classified as white in the system of white supremacy. And so the power center is whomever the white person is. Whether it's male or female, doesn't matter. Whomever the white person is the most powerful person. And that white person can go places and do things that that non-white person can't do. And so that's just a fact of the matter. That's just the truth of the matter. And people who are in that so-called relationship, if they have been in it any time at all, I think if they're aware of anything, they're probably aware of that. I'm not telling them nothing that they don't already know. That black partner does not have the power that white partner has, particularly when they step out the door and go anywhere on the planet, even though they're supposed to be a couple. No, the power is with the white person. And the lack of power is with the non-white person.
Got it. 800-450-7876, and keep stepping, Mr. Fuller. Jay's calling from Chicago on line 5. Jay, your question for Neely Fuller Jr.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. And, Mr. Fuller, it's an honor to talk to you. And I guess my question is this. From what I'm hearing you describe, and I got your book, Universal Capacity Code. So, and I'm taking it as the universal man is somebody who's woke pretty much on all levels, and in his life, because of the things you describe in here, stay on code, always be constructive, or not engage in just frivolous conversation. So this is somebody who is woke 24/7. Am I correct? That's one question.
And you say, is anybody that so-called woke?
No one I know of at that level where he or she is, toward even well.
In other words, is anybody qualified, any non-white person qualified to be officially called universal man or universal woman? Is that the question?
But at the end product, this individual would be woke pretty much on all levels. And I have.
What do you mean by woke?
That's a good question. Woke would be something.
Okay, we can't start. We need to get rid of slangs unless we can tell what we're talking about. And that means we have to be very precise with every word we use.
Okay. So what I mean by woke is someone who's conscious with engaging in, just like now, the conversation we're engaging in, someone who's conscious.
Let's not move too fast. I got to do this in a codified manner. What do you mean by conscious? See, we just don't throw words around in codification. Everything is precise, like math. One and one is two. A two is not the same as a three. And every word that you use has to be precision. Just like you're getting ready to go to the moon. You better not make one mistake, because that one mistake is going to cost you that whole trip.
Okay.
In other words, black people have to become mistake-proof. Now, that's something we all have to try, but this is the process in which we do. And one way to do that starting with the language, is that we just don't throw words around that's not attached to a definition. You got to be able to define everything. Black people usually find that out when we're in court. All of a sudden, words become very important. And we go into shock. That's why we wind up doing a whole lot of time. So we should practice before we get in that situation how to use each and every word like a surgeon uses a knife.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, you answered my next question. That was it. Where do we start at? And that's the start right there.
Yeah. Well, a part of the code is, and this is something for everybody to remember, including me, all problems are solved through the process of doing what? Questions and answers. There's no exception to that rule. If you don't believe it, just keep trying it. Or watch somebody who does it. The minute you start making statements, that's when you're in deep water.
Hmm.
But if you just practice asking questions and get answers to that question one at a time, and always get an answer to the first question before you move to the second. That's a part of the code. Never move to the second question without getting an answer to the first question, even if that answer is I don't know, which will be the answer, the correct answer, a lot of the time, practically most of the time. That's an answer. But you always get an answer to the first question before you move to the second question. Why? Because the logic says if you don't do that, you're going to get confused because the first question was not answered. The first question is probably attached to the second question. So if you move to that second question and that becomes controversial, you've lost track of what you started out to do in the first place. So you should have gotten the first question straight, even if the answer is, like I said, I don't know. Now, that's rock-solid code. But all problems, getting back to the Bayesian formula, there's never been a problem solved that wasn't solved through the process of questions and answers. All you got to do is just keep asking questions and getting answers. You can solve every problem in the universe because that's how it's done.
Hey, thank you. That's it.
Thanks, Jay. 800-450-7876. Anthony's in Buffalo, New York. He's online too. Anthony, your question for Neely Fuller Jr. Anthony?
Yes, I'm here. Mr. Fuller, I wanted to ask you. So earlier I was walking up the street and I saw a truck, and the truck said code enforcement. And I believe that's referring to housing, but it made me think, and I said, as far as the code that you came up with, does that code eventually need enforcements, like as far as some sort of peoples or policing, that once the code is in place, then I think that we'll need someone to actually enforce the code. Is that correct?
No, well, you enforce the code if it's a counter-racist thing. Now, it's the word that goes before when you solve the race problem, which is what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be solving the race problem. That's my assignment. That's why I was born. Why? Because that's the biggest problem that I've ever had. So you always work on the big problems before you get to the little problems. So if that's what I consider to be the assignment, and I think it's my assignment because I can't get away from it. You always know what your assignment is if you can't run from it. I mean, it always catches up with you. Then you know what your assignment is. You know why you were born. If you're trying to get away from the reason you were born, but the reason... You know, you don't want to take on that assignment. You want to do something else. But the assignment keeps catching up with you, and it gets in the way of everything that you're going to do or think you want to do. So the race problem kept jumping in front of me, every move that I made. So then I said, oh, Fuller, you're not supposed to be running from it. That's why you were born. You're supposed to be solving it. That's why it keeps jumping in front of you. So once I start getting into that, I start making sense of my entire existence. Because that is exactly what will happen. You'll know what you're supposed to be doing when you get into the problem-solving mode. Once you fall into that, I mean, you'll just be driven like a magnet toward the problem.
Hold that thought right there, Mr. Fuller. We're going to take a short break. Anthony, I thank you for your call. When we come back, too, I want you to tell folks how they can get a copy of your book. It's a workbook. It's a code. That's what I call it. It's a long title, but Mr. Fuller will explain it and also tell you how you can pick up a copy. 800-450-7876 to speak to Neely Fuller Jr. Your call's next as the big show rolls on from FM 95.9 and AM 1450. WOL, where information is power.
Nelson Show on Alexa.
Thanks for staying with us, folks. I guess it's Neely Fuller Jr. And thank you, Anthony, for your call out of Buffalo. Before we go back to Mr. Fuller, though, I just want to remind you tomorrow, chematologist Tony Bratter will be here. You got a question about Egypt, Egyptology, you know, reach out to Brother Tony right here on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL. All right, before I take another call for you, Mr. Fuller, how can people get a copy of your book? And give us the title.
ProduceJustice.com. And what will come up on the screen is the method for ordering the book. It's two volumes there, actually three, but most people want the latest one, which is the 2016 edition of what I call loosely the code book. I got three titles on there because I had to have three titles there for some reason. I just decided to put three titles on there to try to be as explicit as I possibly could, because a couple of the titles are not explicit enough. So I put a third one there called The Textbook Workbook for Thought, Speech, and or Action for Victims of Racism, which is white supremacy. And also there's a second volume that's a word guide, shows you how to use words, how not to use certain words, what words to ask questions about when other people use these words. Because one thing that the white supremacists are expert at, and that's the use of words. And they can tie you in knots with the use of words, because they know black people are not very word savvy. Unless they're writing a song or something like that, then we can capture that. But that's something that comes from the individual black person. But in the English language, the white supremacists know that they can really get a black person the main thing that they want a black person to be, and that is confused. And the most powerful way to confuse a black person is through the use of language. And get a black person to do almost anything through the use of language. Get them to do something that's absolutely stupid by the use of certain words, a certain way. And the black person will think that what he or she is doing is something smart, when it's just as stupid as it can be, on account of the fancy and skillful and masterful way that the white supremacists use language. So I have a word guide to help a black person to codify against this. See, by doing what? Knowing what questions to ask when they use certain words. And what questions to ask after that first question is answered. And the second, and the third, and the 2000th. And the book will, you know, once we start mastering the way that language is used, we don't have to speak a whole lot of different languages. We just speak the language that we are given, because we don't have time to do all that. And so, but we learn to speak it like we're using a box of tools, because that's all a language is, a toolbox. And you pick out of a toolbox, you know, if you're a carpenter, you pick out a saw or something like that when you need a saw. A hammer and a nail when you need a hammer and a nail. A saw doesn't do the same thing that a hammer and a nail does. Words are the same thing. They're the same way. We have to understand that. So you always choose words that will work for you, not against you. And when other people use words that are what? Confusing, you ask questions about it. Because the white supremacists are really good at that. They know how to use a lot of words that are absolutely confusing. And black people are sitting there nodding their heads like they understand what's being said when they don't understand nothing about what's being said, because nothing is being said that's going to help them. So you can get the book by going to producejustice.com. And the basic two volumes are right there. Producejustice.com. Also the 1984 edition. Some people like say they like the earlier edition of the basic 2016 edition. So that's there too. On that website. Producejustice.com. And I have that website under that name, producejustice.com, because that's what we're all supposed to be doing. Justice has never been produced by anybody in recorded history, because somebody's always been mistreated. And somebody's always not getting the help that they need, as far back as I can remember, and as far back as I've read about. Somebody was being mistreated. So we're trying to produce justice, meaning nobody gets mistreated.
Gotcha.
And everybody who needs help will get it. This is a code that will put us on that track.
Yes, sir. 800-450-7876. Ngozi is calling from Chicago on line 6. Ngozi, you're on with Neely Fuller Jr. You have a question for him?
Yes, I want to make a statement first that when I first became acquainted with Dr. Francis Press Wilson's theory of color confrontation, she mentioned Mr. Fuller in it, and that was the most precise psychoanalytical analysis of racism that I've ever seen, and I read a lot about those things. So, Mr. Fuller, honor to speak with you finally. I first became aware that you were still around on this Carl Nelson show, and your wisdom really has unearthed new realms of thought for me. I understand a lot of what you are talking about, and it makes perfect sense to me. What I want to ask you is if my name is Eight, and I'm telling you I'm fighting for the green people, and the other person's name is B, and they say they're fighting for the green people too. If A downgrades or attacks B, and B doesn't respond to that, who is violating the establishment of a code for justice, A or B?
The person who is subordinate is always beholden to the person who is not, if I understand the question. So in the system of white supremacy, all prisoners of war, all people of color, are equal under any circumstance. They are all equal because they're equal prisoners.
Right.
The system applies to them. The prison master is always white in the system of white supremacy. So
yeah.
The white person in any situation is in a superior position. We have already been defeated. It's not like we're in the process of being defeated, and we have been defeated ever since the system of white supremacy began, because that's how it became white supremacy. Supreme means that's a finished job. That's not a halfway job or something like that. That's not nothing they're practicing on trying to do. That's a complete job. And it is keeping it in place. And it explains all that in the textbook. You know, white supremacy goes through four phases: establishment, maintenance, expansion, and refinement. They're in the refinement stage now. They long ago completed that power thing. Black people just have the power to beg, like prisoners of war. Like I said, you always keep it in mind that we're all prisoners of war if you got color in your skin. And we, so far, have lost the war. But I put the lost in quotes, because you haven't really lost the war until you stop fighting altogether. Stop struggling. You just give up and say, I'm not going to ever try to get away no more. I'm not going to ever try to get out from under this. Black people have not stopped doing that, so the war is not over. But we are prisoners of war because the white supremacists dictate what we do 24/7, regardless of where we are on the planet, directly and indirectly. So if I understand your question, if black people have a falling out with each other about how we're going about fighting racism or any other fight that we have, we're just prisoners fighting in the prison yard. And it doesn't mean anything except we lose because we're fighting each other and we're not going to gain nothing from it because we don't have nothing to gain. Neither one of us have anything. The white supremacists have us all.
Thank you for that understanding. It clarifies my understanding of the code. Thank you, Mr. Baba Fuller.
I hope I'm putting it out so I'm understood. And Neely Fuller has a huge flaw, too. And I want this for everybody who's listening today. I have a serious flaw on these programs, and that flaw is people ask me questions, and I get wrapped up in something that I'm illustrating, and I get away from the question that they are asking. Don't let me get away with that, because if you let me get away with that, the white supremacists, they know how to manipulate people like that, all right? You ask a question, and they go all around Robin's barn, I mean, and don't answer your question. They are good at that, but it sounded like they answered your question. So practice on Neely Fuller on this program or any other program you hear me on. Say, Fuller, you're not answering my question. I mean, put it on me. I'm no exception
to
the rule.
But you answered mine.
Yes. I mean, hey, wait a minute. You're not answering my question, Fuller. I mean, come on. You're a fellow prisoner now, one to another. Answer my question and jerk me back to reality because I'll get away from it. I'm not doing it deliberately, but that don't have nothing to do with it. It ain't personal. It's business, like they say in the mafia. It ain't personal. We got to stop being personal. It's all business. Something either works or it doesn't. We're trying to get a job done. That's the main thing. Like General Curtis LeMay said, the point is to hit the target, not to just fly over it and try to hit it. Hit the target. Otherwise, why go?
All right. Thank you, Ngozi. Thank you for your question. Real quick, because we run out of time, Mr. Fuller, but there's a bunch of tweet questions I got for you, so I'm just going to ask you just one. Which is the bigger problem for non-white people, racism or colonialism?
Same thing. See, that's another thing I can talk about on another program at great length. In fact, I've written down, it's not in the textbook, maybe about 40 different types of things that you can call it if you just want to. And I've told people, call it white supremacy. The white supremacists don't like that, which means you're hitting a nerve. You know, they'll say white supremacy exists, but I ain't one of them. Okay? Then who are you? See, that's a question. Are you on board with it or not? What do you do to prove that you're not one? Because I have no way of knowing whether you are or not, sir or ma'am. Always be polite. Don't start arguments. That's a part of the code. The code says never have an argument with anybody. Have a conversation. And you do that through questions and answers.
All right. Real quick, though, another question is for me. We got 60 seconds, they just told me. You've been talking about racism, white supremacy for quite some time. Now, all of a sudden now, it's jumped into the lexicon of the rest of the world. You hear it in people in Congress, even the president talks about it.
Yes, sir.
Your thoughts.
Well, the white supremacists have figured out how they're going to squirm out of it when it comes their way, the individual white supremacists. Is they going to say, who? Not me. You know, I'm not supreme over nothing, you know. And then you go into the question mode. And that's where the book comes in. What questions to ask white people? All right.
All right.
They are in there. Okay.
Thank you, Neely Fuller Jr., because we got to run. But thank you, and thank you for all the information you shared with us today. All right, folks, we got to step out of here. Stay strong, stay positive, please stay healthy. We'll see you tomorrow at 4 o'clock right here on FM 95.9 and AM 1450 WOL, where information is power.